It is Thursday, November the 4th. Welcome to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein. And as always, before we get started, I want to make sure that I thank the patrons of the podcast. Patreon.com/ The Mind and Fitness Podcast. If you are getting value out of this podcast and if you are feeling like it's contributing to your well-being, your wellness, getting over and kicking this chronic pain that has been biting you in the ass for far too long, this is a great way to support the show. So let me give a shout out to Sylvie, James, John, Brooke, Jason, Colette, Mindy, Irina, Kelly, Tony, Francisco, Michael, Victoria, Anthony, Jen, and Nate, Christina, Ross, Julie, Brian, Arnie, and Barb. Thank you all so much for continuing to support the podcast. And spoiler alert, one of those people is being interviewed on the show next week. So, but that's next week. For this week, one of the things that I really, really love about doing this show and sort of sitting on the peripheral of people that are kind of out there and maybe they've had challenges with chronic symptoms for some time, maybe a little while, maybe a long time, is that I see these names that go from asking a lot of questions on public forums and Facebook and things like that, looking for some assistance or some help with the issues that they're having. And then sometimes these people evolve into leaders in the space because they've solved their problem. They understand what really the root cause is as opposed to symptomatic treatment. And today's guest, Ann Miller, is certainly one of those. And I'm excited for y'all to hear us go, y'all. So she lives in Georgia and y'all, I'm trying to get a little bit of Southern twang while I talk about it. But she runs Paths Beyond Pain and you can find her at pathsbeyondpain.com. But we get into sort of the crux in the beginning and the origination of her story and ultimately how did she overcome it? What were some things that she learned about herself and all that good stuff. So I'm excited for you to listen to Ann's story. And actually, one of the things that I've been asking of my recent guests is, what is it that we can call the episode? Meaning like, you know, you have a great message. What would you want people out there to know about the things that you've been through? What would you call the episode? Basically, if you were to write a biography or name this episode, what would you call it? And Ann shot back at me and said, reclaim your life at any age. And I think it's a really great message. So without further ado, here is Ann Miller. Welcome to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Eddie Lindenstein. And joining me is Ann Miller out of Atlanta. Ann, can you hear me?
I can. Great to be here.
Yeah, I'm so thrilled to have you here. Your voice is one of the ones that and when I say voice, I really mean text, computer typing, if you will. But your voice is one of the ones that I have kind of seen on the peripheral for a long time. So it's nice to kind of jump in a little bit more and do a little bit of a deeper dive into your story. Now, before we get into all that stuff, though, tell us a little bit about you know, where on planet Earth are you? And you're doing a project right now in the TMS chronic pain community. I want to hear a couple of those things.
Okay, yeah. I live north of Atlanta, and I've lived there for several, you know, couple of decades. And I've just started, you know, this is what we should all do during a pandemic, is start your own business. And so I have started my own business in the chronic pain community. I am a consultant, but I'm a consultant in kind of a different way than most people are used to. So I get to know an individual, their likes, their dislikes, what they've done in the past for their chronic pain, how much knowledge do they have, what are their, you know, learning styles. I kind of get to know their personality. We can talk a little bit about how I kind of delve into, you know, finding out about them and probably what's maybe at the crux of their chronic pain. Is it more emotional? Is it, you know, repressed emotions, or is it more just neural pathways that have gotten activated because of a past injury or you know, a car accident or something like that? I put all these different factors together, and then I come up with a menu of options for them programs that they can try. I don't have a program. I'm not selling a program of my own, but I understand all the programs that are out there and the strengths and benefits of each one and the personality types that are going to be most likely to benefit from those programs. And I match it with the individual.
Awesome.
So I'm really excited about that angle. I wish it had been around when I first learned about mind-body healing, because I spent an awful lot of time trying new things and they didn't work and I would quit it. And then it would make me doubt whether I even had a mind-body issue and I would try something else. And so trying to kind of cut that out and weed through some of the all the different information for people. That's my goal.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's a great segue of what, of where I'd like to go next is, so how long ago did, maybe I'll Tarantino this, how long ago was it, when the issue was, I guess what you would deem solved, meaning you knew, that this was a mind body thing and you stopped doing the doctor chasing. How long ago was that?
That was 2018.
Okay.
So in July of 2018, because I had an acute event in July of 2017, and I had had decades. I'm 58. I'm very open about my age. 58 years old. I had had, you know, a good 30 years of pain of one sort or another, and so I have, you know, I've been through it, but I had always been able to put on the brave face and do my basic responsibilities. But in July of 2017, I had an acute back event that I could not move. I was totally paralyzed from. And then again, like usual, chased all the old physical therapy, chiropractors, doctors, you know, surgery, et cetera, until July of 2018, it happened again. And so it did open the door for me. It was a watershed moment because I could admit that there were some things about July that made me very sad. And I had never been willing to admit that my emotions were affecting me physically. I had a doctor go there 10 years previously with a fibromyalgia diagnosis, and I completely shut her down. So I had never been able to admit that to myself before that. But in July of 2018, when I'm laying flat on my bed for the second July of my life, I could admit it to myself. And I Googled back pain with emotional cause, and up came all this stuff.
Wow.
And that's how we started.
Did you, like, was there anything that maybe tipped you off prior to the, like, let me give you an example, is that several months before I had come across any of Sarno's work or any of this kind of related emotional rooted type of diagnosis or hypothesis, a doctor had kind of sort of and kind of a really roundabout way had implied like a mind body type of a thing. And I really, you know, I paid no attention to it. There was no way that was me, like that kind of thing. That was how I felt about it. So did you have anything like that where, you know, a doctor may have mentioned this years ago or something along those lines? Does that make sense?
It does. It makes perfect sense. I had multiple times where somebody mentioned something and I just rejected it each time.
Yeah.
I was so wrapped up in handling it all that I would not admit to anybody that I was not handling it all that well. And I got very offended. 10 years prior, I had a fibromyalgia diagnosis and the doctor said she wanted to put me on Lyrica, which is an antidepressant. And I looked at her and said, I am not in pain because I'm depressed. I'm depressed because I'm in pain.
Yeah.
And I just told, I mean, that's the kind of attitude I had. It was not open at all. It was really shut down. I had some ear issues. And I heard all this crackling and weird stuff in my ears. And I was convinced, and I had a lot of dizziness. I was convinced there was something wrong. And I went to the ENT a couple of different times. And finally, the second time, he's like, you know, everybody's ears crackle. It's just that we don't notice it. But then once we do notice it, then we keep noticing it and we think that that's a problem, but yeah. It really isn't a problem. So just stop noticing it. And I'm like, that was a great answer from a doctor, right? He didn't get into the emotional part of it, but just, you know, there is nothing to worry about here, and just stop noticing it.
Yeah. It's pretty similar to what the doctor that I had mentioned that several months before I had stumbled upon this kind of stuff, because he had said that he tends to find that in chronic situations like this or chronic issues like this, that the less time that you spend thinking about it, the sooner it's going to go away or the better you'll feel. And I was like, what? Like, I was very offended, right? So I never went back and saw him. But now thinking back, like, Dr. Frankie had a point. And it'd be interesting to sit down and have a conversation with him now, because is this what you were getting at, you know, this kind of thing? Or was it, you know, something different? So how far back, because you mentioned some of the issues that you were having, but how far back, you know, thinking back, are we talking about 20 years, 30 years, 5 years? Like, how far does this stuff go back?
A good 30 years. I had, I've had back pain all of my life. Mm-hmm. When I was 12, a woman at a pool pointed to me and screeched at the top of her lungs to my mother, "Look at that scoliosis on that child. You've got to get that child looked at. She needs a brace. She's going to have lifelong back pain if you don't get her in a brace." And like, this is pretty much the last thing a 12-year-old girl wants to hear. I was already a shy duckling, and to be like pointed at and like, you know, "You've got the crooked spine, you're gonna have lifelong back pain, blah 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 blah." So interesting, when I unraveled all my pain sequences, the back pain was the last one to unravel. And I know that, when I know why, because it was the first one ingrained. But in my 20s, I had, you know, back pain. I had, in my 30s, I started in with stomach pain and back pain. And my 40s, I kind of totally fell apart. This is when I started getting fibromyalgia diagnoses, chronic Lyme. I had widespread pain, and they could not figure, and all my labs were beautiful. Of course, this is how it is. You know, I feel like I'm 90, but my labs are gorgeous. Yeah. Right? There's so many diagnoses, I can't even remember them all. I had shoulder, knee, a lot of dizziness. I went through this whole dizziness rabbit hole, and they wanted to drill into my ear and relieve the pressure, and they wanted me in braces. And I mean, depending on the doctor I went to for the complaint, let's take dizziness. If I went to an orthodontist about it, well, yeah, they had a solution. It was full braces, right? At 50 years old.
Yeah.
If I went to the ENT, a different one, it was, we can, you probably have some inflammation in there. We can drill in there and put in an anti-inflammatory. And that was their approach. And so it's doctors, they want to help. I really do. But all these doctors wanted to help, and they thought that they could. But I'm seriously glad I didn't have my ear drilled into, or a full mouth of braces, because it would not have helped my pain or my dizziness. I ended up doing all these bizarre head position things, supposedly cured myself. I know it was a placebo, because I just stopped doing them one day, and I was still dizzy, and I'll still get an occasional dizzy spell. It's so short lived now, Eddie, it's hilarious. It's like this old symptom my body will try. And I'm just like, no, 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 you're not dizzy, you're stressed. Or you're not dizzy, you're sad. Let's really call this what this is.
Yeah.
It'll pass within 10 minutes. I've forgotten about it. I'm like, oh yeah, I was dizzy early. Yeah, I wonder what happened to that.
God, the dizziness is kind of wild, because, and I was scrolling trying to find when this came up, somebody just messaged me, and I wish I could remember what platform it was on. I think it was on Instagram, but it was in the last week or couple of weeks where they had said, have you talked to anybody with dizziness? And I said, I did talk to somebody that I know talked about vertigo, but not dizziness specifically. So I'm glad this is airing because you're talking about it specifically.
Crazy. I would run into doorways and things like that. I mean, I'd be so dizzy that I could not, you know, walk straight. But even the one of the doctors that was treating me even gave me this, if you ever get pulled over and accused of being drunk, have them call this number because I would like sometimes walk crooked.
Yeah. Wow. Right. So, you know, these aren't kind of the typical Sarno-esque, at least as most people think about it. If you really read, especially the Mind-Body Prescription, he goes into a whole litany of different things. But who was it that, I guess, or how did it happen that you ended up coming across, hey, maybe this doctor-to-doctor thing isn't the correct thing? You said that it was in, you had the watershed moment in 2018. How did you come across it?
Well, it was an acute back problem.
Okay.
That's how I, so I also have the classic Sarno low back issues. So, and it, you know, it just completely failed me. I couldn't get out of bed. And so that was so frightening and so worrying. You know, looking back, I can definitely see how my body was whispering and then talking, and then finally it started screaming at me, and it certainly, you know, it'll certainly get your attention.
Yeah.
When your spine fails you, that's unlike anything else I think that's really out there, is when a body part just completely fails you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know you've experienced that too. I think you just kind of recently experienced that, right?
Yeah. Just in the last few months, I picked up a barbell and my, it was like somebody walked by with like nunchucks and hit me right in the lower back. And I went down and it was as if I was sitting on a chair, but I was laying down, on my side, like basically in the fetal position, and I couldn't straighten out. I mean, it seems like such a small thing, but if I were to rewind and have that exact same situation come about, let's say, you know, 5-6 years ago, I mean, I would have freaked. I would have almost certainly called 911 or called my wife, and because I wouldn't have been able to get up and even get to the car to go to an emergency room. So it would have been extremely challenging. But I just laid there and I took it straight to, I mean, Sarno. I just did a podcast on like the 12 daily reminders, and one of them, as Sarno was saying, to not, you know, we must think psychologically, not physically. And that was the example that I had given, was that this thing happened and my mind didn't immediately go to how much weight was on the bar, how incorrectly did I maybe lift it. Instead, it went to what's going on right now. And I was lifting the next day. That's pretty atypical, right? Because if you were to have something like that occur, for most people, that is a long drawn out thing. I mean, my brother he's still talking about a sore shoulder from being rear ended at 10 miles an hour 9 years ago. that's the stuff that I think about a lot of times, is that people get and it's not their fault. They get stuck in this unfortunate spinning wheel over and over and over. So I'm curious, what in the literature jumped out at you? Like, what really resonated with you, and what was it, or who was it? Was it Nicole's book? Was it Curable? Was it what was it that spoke to you?
Well, I don't think Curable existed at the beginning in 2018. Maybe they did. I just didn't hear about them. It was Sarno because I had the cute back, and what really spoke to me was the personality traits. That's what really got to me. Not so much perfectionism, because I didn't believe I was a perfectionist. Humorously, I knew that perfectionism was a character flaw, and so I didn't want to be a perfectionist. So I was so perfectionistic, I couldn't even admit to being a perfectionist. But a lot of the other ones did really speak to me. And of course, perfectionism does now. But the ones that really spoke to me at the time were a goodist, wanting to see myself as a good person and do good.
Yeah.
I was highly, highly attuned to that. In fact, that's one of, you know, kind of the thing I love about, I'll continue on here with the personality traits, but just as a side note, the thing that I love about this work is it continues and it grows with you. And as you grow in it and with it, you discover other avenues and aspects of your own personality. And it's sort of fascinating. It's not like you're ever done. And so that fascinates me. And the goodism and my identity as doing good things is, quite frankly, it limits me sometimes. So I've been trying to put that down a little bit once in a while. But anyway, perfectionism, goodism, a high sense of responsibility, self-critical, all those personality traits. It was, pretty much check, 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 yep. All of them, all the way down. I mean, maybe one or two I didn't have, but all the rest I did.
Talk about some, if you're willing to, some examples of this coming up in the past. And I'm talking like you had this 30 years of pain and symptom issues, but you have the personality traits. So are there some specific examples where you can think of that, you know, either actions that you've had or thoughts that you've had that really identify with the goodist or the perfectionist or something like that? Like it, you know, just examples in the past.
You know, interestingly, I spent a little bit of time trying to think of when did I really start this repression of emotions? When did this really hit? Because I remember myself in college having a roommate that did really repress her feelings. And she was from inner city Detroit. She was a beautiful Black girl from inner city Detroit. And she point blank said, "I don't want to be happy because on the other side of that is sadness. I just want to be in the middle. I just want to be calm and peaceful in the middle." And I remember thinking in college, wow, that's not me at all. I want to feel all the emotions.
Yeah.
I want to feel, you know, everything. And so I was trying to think of like, how did I leave that girl and become this incredibly repressed woman?
Yeah.
And I, you know, I think that honestly, being a female trying to make it in a male-dominated business world is where I started to repress. It was way before children, and I was highly career-oriented, and you cannot cry. You cannot show emotion. You cannot show anything. You have to be calm. You have to handle it. If you're a woman and you show any emotion, they will blame hormones and totally negate you. So I think that's honestly where it began. And it paid off for me. See, here's the thing. It pays off big time. Or at least your brain thinks it does, because you start getting acclaim, you start getting recognition and promotions and more money and more responsibilities because you can handle it, unlike the female next to you, et cetera. And so it pays off. And so you do it more. And I think that's where the cycle started for me, interestingly.
It's really interesting. It's to me, and correct me if this is not the case for you, but, whatever that phrase is, can't see the forest through the trees or whatever that phrase is. But I can identify like I just asked you a question, you knew exactly where to go with that. However, when I was in the midst of, taking my sales career far more seriously than it really should have been taken, I couldn't have identified with probably any of the traits that were in Sarno's works. I can after the fact. But do you think that would be the case for you? If I walked up to you 20 years ago and said, you have all these traits and this is why you're having all those issues, how would you have accepted that? Could you even identify those being parts of your personality at the time?
I could have identified some of them. I think that's why I didn't want to identify with the perfectionism thing, because like I said, I considered it a fault. And I probably would not have identified with self-critical. But a lot of those traits are what I would, you know, what we would normally judge as good. right?
Yep.
So obviously wanting to do good and be seen as good, that's good. It's got good in the name. But, you know, a high sense of responsibility, I mean, I was raised to have a high sense of responsibility. Yep. So that to me is a quote unquote good trait. So a lot of those Sarno traits are really good. So I do think I would have been open to checking the box on those.
Yep.
But I would not have been open that I was repressing other parts of my personality. I would not have been open to that. I wouldn't have been open to that in 2018. I had to get there through long, painful work, long, painful soul searching, quite honestly.
How, so that would have been right around the time that I started engaging in the online TMS community as well, because it was right around, I was a little bit earlier. So I found the Sarno book at the very tail end of June of the year before, 2017. And I feel like I watched some of your content or posts or questions or, you know, whatever we want to call them, because I had been around for a little over a year probably by that point. And this podcast started recording in October of 2017. So it certainly was running at that time. Do you feel like you had any sort of, because some people have like real trouble grasping. I know you'd said that you saw the personality traits in Sarno's book, but were there times where you felt like either you weren't grasping mind-body as a really viable solution for you? Or were you fully all in from the beginning and there was no doubt in your mind?
Oh, no, I had so much doubt. I had a lot of doubt. I had a lot of skepticism. Even when one thing would another, right? Which is, you know, in our human nature, I guess, and we are so, you know, really taught to get at structural things for pain, right?
Yep.
From a very young age, right? You get a boo-boo where there's something wrong, right? So I had to prove it to myself over and over and over again. So you can do that. I'm living proof. You can do this work. You can have a tremendous success story without 100% belief, because I didn't have it. And here I am.
Yeah.
You know, I'm living life grandly. So, but the thing is, you do have to have an open mind. You do have to be willing to go there and try and start and then look for your body for some proof. And for me, it got worse. Sometimes my symptoms went bonkers when I started the work. And luckily we had these online forums, because I could ask there, my symptoms are going bonker. And people would say, probably Eddie Lindenstein said, keep going. This, you know, it's good. You've got it on the run.
Yeah.
And so I believed that. And I believed enough to keep trying and keep looking for proof. And slowly, my body began to, you know, have fewer symptoms. I'll never forget the night I rolled over in bed. Of course, I remember low back was one of my key things.
Yep.
And I fell asleep on my stomach. And I woke up in the morning and I was just, for a minute, I was like, oh no. Then I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I don't have any pain. I got no pain in my neck. I've got no pain in my lower back. I'm like, oh. You know, see, sleeping on your stomach is a limiting belief that we don't need to worry about that now.
Yeah. One of the things that comes to mind too, I can edit this part out if you. So one thing that I always think about is like Sarno has this these bookends of 30 to 60 years old as like the age of responsibility. And that's usually when people will have their symptoms. For the most part, I feel, and maybe I'm incorrect in thinking about this, but this is episode 199 of this podcast. And I feel like most of the time people fall into the 30 to 40 year old demographic or so. And there's outliers. There's people that are a little bit older. Certainly that have appeared. Nicole's a little bit older, but for the most part, they're kind of in that 30 to 40. Talk just a little bit about like, cause you know, this is a new agey concept is not really the right way to describe it, but you know, I feel like people right now that are 25 years old, if they heard about a mind body being a solution for long-term health problems, would be far more accepting than most people that are older. So, but you saw these concepts, you identified them, and you grasped it and you did your thing. Like, can you just talk a little, I mean, ageism and TMS, I don't know. There's probably not a ton of content on that, but I'm curious on that just because, you know, I think you were probably in your late 40s when you would have found this stuff, right?
No, I was, I was in my 50s. I'm 58 now.
Oh, wow. So, okay.
I can talk about that. And that's one reason why I like to talk about my age, because, especially in this realm, is because there is no amount of time that you have this pain pathways ingrained that you can't recover from.
Yeah.
Because, again, I'm 30 years plus with some of these same pains, and they're all gone. So, it's doable. It's really, really doable. And I think it's important to highlight people of all different ages. Yes, 25-year-olds are going to be in pain too. I was when I was 25. Yeah. And yes, you can learn it when you're 58, 60, whatever. I don't think there's an upper limit to that. I always have been wanting to learn. I've always been pretty open-minded, although I was not open-minded to initially to that my emotions could be the crux of my issues. I think that I knew that they were, and I didn't want to admit it to myself because I didn't want to go there and examine them. I mean, that's the God's honest truth right there. When that doctor told me that she wanted to put me on the antidepressant,
yeah.
And I have got nothing against antidepressants, by the way, but I didn't want to be on one because I didn't want to admit that I wasn't able to handle my life. I guess I just got in so much pain and desperate enough that I was willing to try it. I mean, I guess that's what it came down to, Eddie, is I just was in, I had had it, and I was done not living the life that I wanted to live. I was done living a small life because, your life, when you have chronic pain, it gets smaller and smaller and smaller, and there's more and more things that you can't do and more foods that you can't eat or more and more places you can't sit or beds you can't lay on, or it's like all this adaptation and behavioral modification, it just makes you small, 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 small. And I had it. I had always, when I was in the fibromyalgia days and the chronic Lyme days, I really believed that there was something systemic wrong with me, which is why I tried so many different diets, like the vegan diet, the anti-inflammatory diet, the gluten-free diet, et cetera, et cetera. I had my air quality in my house checked several times for mold. I had the water in my house checked. I just felt like it was something systemic. I didn't have my brain checked. And so, lo and behold, it was systemic, and it walks around with me.
It's like the most systemic thing ever, right?
It totally is.
Yeah, that's funny that you say that, because I do remember times when I was convinced that I had a very serious dairy issue, and my wife and I would find, we're going to a Washington Huskies game, and we're going to go eat at this restaurant that's near there, and I would try and find like an online menu that contained ingredients, and if it didn't have it, then I'm calling the restaurant ahead of time to ask, hey, do you know is there milk products that are in this particular bread that you serve that, maybe is only there a couple days a week, but are you serving it there too? And then giving the news to my wife, hey, that Italian place you really wanted to try, we can't go because it may or may not have milk in the bread. You know what I mean? So that's the small life that you're talking about. Another note on antidepressants, because that was something that was recommended to me as well. And that was, it wasn't recommended, but it was, hey, if this sports psychologist, can't fix the issue or find what the issue is, then this might be a good idea to go on. And that was a really big tipping point for me, because it was like, whoa, so it's not a painkiller. It's not a anti-inflammatory, but it's something that's dealing with the brain in some way. So am I thinking about this entirely wrong? And I actually recently saw a news story in the last few days about long COVID symptoms and antidepressants being used as a very successful therapeutic for that. In place, like right now, there, I don't even know the pronunciation, mononuclear antibodies or something like that. If there's a shortage or they're too expensive, and they were talking specifically about other countries in the world that may not be able to pay for $700 for one treatment of the antibodies, that antidepressants work as a tremendous therapeutic. And I thought, huh. But I don't know any about
it. Yeah. Article. I was like,
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not an expert in that stuff, but it did make me think about, are we dealing with the, like, what possible way could that help? But again, I don't know enough about pharmaceuticals and stuff like that to be able to speak fully on it. So I kind of want to switch gears. One thing I'm always very curious about is, you know, likely members of your family, saw that this was the variety of symptoms was debilitating in some way for a long time. And then suddenly like a switch gets flipped. What's the reception from family and friends about this change that occurred?
I know. Well, it has been met with some disbelief at first, because you know I have tried a lot of different things, and each thing I tried over the year, many years, was always like, this is going to be the thing, you know, let's say chronic Lyme, I'm going to, you know, kill these spirochetes that are making me feel so horrible, and you know I you know took rounds of antibiotics, and then I would sit in hot, you know, saunas to try to sweat them out, and you know, all this crazy making the chronic Lyme. And so I think at first they thought this was just another thing that I was going to do, right? And it was going to, and then it was not going to work. However, proof is in the pudding. And so longevity wise, you know, this has not been a temporary fix. And some of those things weren't even a fix. They were just something I tried hoping to get a fix. But, you know, once in a while, one would make me feel a little bit better for a little while. I remember the gluten-free diet made me feel like a tiny bit better for like a week or two. So now, I mean, my husband is overjoyed. I mean, he doesn't have chronic pain. He's one of those people that, you know, evidently processes his emotions and learned how to process them.
Yeah.
But he, you know, he's overjoyed because he's got his wife back. I'm out hiking. We're going to go out, you know, hopefully if it's not going to rain all this evening, we're going to go out dancing tonight at a street fair.
Awesome.
So, you know, he's an active man and he's got his wife back in a very joyful way. As he says, he's just trying to keep up now. So, and that has, you know, that's never been we've been married 36 years. That's never been how we are, but that's how we are now. And my kids have, you know, I've got a grandson and I'm on the floor playing with him, you know, crawling around on the floor, playing cars. I mean, sitting down there on the floor playing for, I mean, hours, Eddie. I couldn't do that with my kids. Now here I am doing it with my grandkid. So it's, you know, at first there was skepticism, and rightly so. I was skeptical too. But now everybody's pretty happy for me, to be very honest with you.
That's awesome.
Now I have other, you know, family members that have chronic pain and they don't see that it applies necessarily to them. You know, their chronic pain is structural, but they're happy for me that I solved my issues.
How do you find, so that's an interesting thing, because I've had that come up in family too. You know, my issues are real or my issues are physical. I don't get bullish on it at all. I just let it go. Do you find yourself getting, especially, and we're going to transition here in a second, or in a couple minutes, to kind of what you're doing now, but do you find yourself, you know, really defending, you know, that it's my, like, are you banging the drum or are you kind of a little bit more passive when it comes to this stuff and they'll just come to it when they're ready?
That's it. They'll come to it when they're ready. I just keep putting the information out there. I just keep sharing myself. I keep sharing, you know, my thoughts and how they translate to emotions and how many layers of emotions I'll have in certain situations, and then how I feel that in my body. And I just keep putting the information out there, sharing myself, and eventually it will, eventually if someone wants, almost like putting out an invisible ball, right? Mm-hmm. I think of it that way. And if they want to pick up someday, they may pick up the ball and play ball with me.
Awesome. I love you putting it that way. It brings up the next question. You had talked about a little bit earlier, you know, getting to know a client or consulting with them, but then almost creating like a menu of different mm-hmm. things that they could do or they could try. Talk about some of the things that have worked for you in the last 3 years. Because there are certain go-tos that I have, and they're completely different from what other people may go to. So let's talk a few minutes about some of the different things that you do that you find work really well for you.
Okay. By far, I think that there are three top things that I do. So for Anne, it's a combination of journaling, and I do it very much as Nicole Sachs prescribes yeah. with my 20 minutes and, you know, lock the door and shred it afterwards and just rage on the page. it's very much that, and it always has, and it has always been a tremendous relief for me. I can say things in a journal that I would never say to a therapist. And perhaps that is still my goodism, right? That I don't even want the therapist to be disappointed in me. But that's the way it is for me. And that's fine. It helps me. And that's what I do. I don't do it every day. I don't journal every day anymore. I certainly did in the beginning when I was in pain.
Yep.
I was faithful to it. It was a commitment I made to myself, and it helped and it worked. And now I do it when I feel like I need it. And that might be, you know, if there's a lot of stress going on, it might be several times a week. And if there's not a lot of stress, it may only be a couple times a week, or maybe I'll even go a week where I don't. It sort of depends, right? I also felt like I think journaling is really helpful if a person hasn't had a lot of capital T trauma in their life.
Yep.
And I don't have a lot of capital T trauma. I have some little traumas, but I don't have a lot of capital T trauma. So I'm not scared to go there. I enjoy writing. I haven't had a ton of therapy. So I haven't like explored a lot of parts of myself before. So that's why journaling, I think, worked for me. And I think for other people that also like kind of fit that bill, it's going to work for them too. But someone who maybe has a bunch of capital T trauma and they don't want to bring that out, that would not necessarily be the tool for them, in yeah. my opinion. And that's, you know, that's just my opinion. Another tool that really worked for me was somatic tracking. I did get to a point where I was feeling really great as far as fibromyalgia wise and kind of that widespread pain, and the dizziness was mostly gone, but I had that one spot in the low back, that acute spot was just always there.
Wouldn't budge.
It would budge. It would flare and get, you know, it would wax and wane.
Yeah.
But it was always in that exact location. And so I did use somatic tracking. You know, now they're calling it brain reprocessing therapy after Alan Gordon's new book. I did use that for that. And it worked beautifully for that. And that's what I kind of see too. If someone has pain, like that's one little stubborn spot that is not kind of, you know, it's not moving around, or it's just there so constantly, or maybe they were injured, but long after the injury should have healed, they should be out of pain. This is where I see the brain reprocessing therapy really strong for those kinds of pains.
Mm-hmm.
So it was journaling, it was somatic tracking, and then meditation. I absolutely have fallen in love with meditation. I had tried meditation off and on for years and always hated it, always felt like a failure, always could never quiet my mind, I was always just, quite frankly, it just made my pain worse. I'm like, this is not helping. I fail to see how this is helping. Yeah. I will never get that 20 minutes back in my life. I cannot. And But now I really love it because I do it differently. I lay down. I do guided meditation through Insight Timer, the free app on Insight Timer. And I almost always have background music plus a guided voice. And I really like it that way. And that's what works for me. And so those three things have changed my life.
That's great. Is there like a particular cadence that you find yourself, you know, is this a daily thing or is it a weekly thing or is it every couple of days or is it as needed? Like, what do you kind of see as your, you know, your way of doing all this stuff right now?
Yeah. So the meditation is daily. Okay. Almost daily. You know, if I miss a day, I'm not going to self-compassion, right? Yep. A lot of self-compassion. If I miss a day, I'm not going to beat myself up because I missed a day. It's fine. Yep. That's the, you know, if you were to beat yourself up for not meditating, now you've like undone what you're going to do in meditation. But that's pretty much daily. The journaling right now is just as needed. And I can almost feel myself getting angsty. I can feel the pressure building and I'm like, I need to let off steam, right? I just need to let it off. So I'm in tune enough with my body and to know that. I will do walking around though, journaling, just almost very Adam Heller-esque, right? Right now, what are you feeling? Right now, what are you feeling? Right now, what are you feeling? Over and over again. If I don't have pen and paper, I will absolutely do that.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's a go-to too. In a pinch, I only get around like maybe 5 or 10 rounds of it before I lose interest and stop. But it's just really helpful to be in tune with the emotions. And I always try to bring it back to, where in my body am I feeling that? So right now I am, my emotion is in vindictiveness. Where am I feeling vindictive, right? Like, where is it? You know, it's God, that's in my gut. I mean, I can just feel it right in my gut.
Yep.
So dropping back into the body always, like, where is the feeling?
I love it. So we're wrapping up now, and the talk about how, because there's going to be people that are going to listen to this, and for whatever, you know, for the variety of different reasons, I think there's a lot of them where they're going to say, wow, I really identify with Anne, or she's really speaking to me. Is there a website? Is there a Facebook page? Like, how can somebody get in touch with you if the things that they've heard today really spoke or resonated with them?
Yeah, I've got all those things. So I have a website, and all of the platforms are the same words. So they're all, it's all the same title. So mm-hmm. the name of the website and the name of the business is Paths Beyond Pain, all one word, pathsbeyondpain.com. And it's paths with an S because we look at multiple different paths. So pathsbeyondpain.com is the website. There's a private Facebook group that people can join if they are on Facebook or whatever we are now calling it. And that's Paths Beyond Pain. And that would be a private group. You can find it. There's a couple of little entry questions. You know, will you, you know, be kind and respectful and obey the rules and those kind of questions before you join. I'm on Instagram at Paths Beyond Pain. And I am not on Twitter.
It's a cesspool.
You know, I guess if you're LinkedIn, you can find me, Paths Beyond Pain, on LinkedIn as well.
That's funny. I was looking on here and I thought I clicked when you had said Twitter for some reason. I was like, oh, this is the Twitter icon. But then you said not, and I had clicked the little emblem at the bottom of the website, and it took me to LinkedIn. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool because you have a LinkedIn invite from me. Now,
awesome.
So you have that.
Awesome.
And thank you so much for dropping by. I always love having a follow-up at some point down the road. Maybe it's probably 2022 kind of thing. Would you be willing to come back and maybe, you know, what if, because I think one thing that you'll find as you work with people over the next several months is that you'll start to learn a lot of things from them. And I'd be curious about some of the journeys that you've embarked on since then. Does that sound good?
That sounds great. I would love that.
Terrific. Anne, thanks so much for joining us. Don't hang up just yet, but thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Eddie.